Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Veil of Sacrifice by Michael Anderley, narrated by Emily Beresford. Chapter 1. The staff of Bisbibiar Hospital was no better prepared for Beatrice Villon than the archaeological world had been when she first arrived on the scene all those years ago. Like those unimaginative archaeologists, the doctors and nursing staff thought they were safe in their basic suppositions. That they understood the world around them, that things would continue to function as they always had. Though always was not something anyone could claim to understand. Not yet, anyway. "It's a miracle he's alive," one of the nurses commented in Danish. The man sitting at the front desk was obviously used to brushing off less important people than Dr. Villon.
"I have never seen so many burns. Looking at his chart makes my skin hurt," he replied to the nurse.
Dr. Villon tapped her fingernails on the counter. Loudly. The man at the desk slowly turned to look at her. The audacity of it made her want to slap him across the face and tell him exactly who she was. Still, she knew from decades of experience securing funding from hesitant investors that manipulating others often required a soft touch.
"Can I help you?"
he asked in English, speaking slowly as if she might not understand this language any better than she would have understood Danish. "Samuel Goodwin, where is he? I'm here to see him." Dr. Villon put as much concern into her voice as she could. It was easier knowing he couldn't see her eyes behind her sunglasses. When she was younger, she might have batted her eyelashes. Fortunately, that era was behind her.
"He's not receiving visitors," the man at the desk said.
The nurse sniffed back a tear and glanced at the chart. As much as Villon hated to admit it, she missed Goodwin already. The three men in her employ she had brought with her were not nearly as competent at navigating social situations as he was. Goodwin would have known some way to deftly manipulate the nurse or the receptionist into telling them what they wanted. The security staff she had brought with her were committed to watching the entrances and exits to the hospital lobby, but were more than happy to let Dr. Villon do the talking. Dr. Villon did not have the patience for such subtlety. She reached across the desk and snatched the chart from the nurse. A cursory glance showed her the room number she was looking for. With that, she shoved the clipboard back into the bumbling nurse's hands and pushed through the double doors leading into the rest of the hospital.
"You can't go back there,"
the male receptionist called after her. Villon heard the heavy clunk of a meaty hand clamping on top of a phone. At least her security team understood protocols and had stopped the man from calling for any of the hospital's guards. Not that it should have mattered. Dr. Villon bustled down the hallway toward the room she sought. A doctor appeared, his eyebrows furrowing at the obvious intrusion. She knew his face, if not his name. When she removed her sunglasses, his watery eyes shot up into his receding hairline.
"Dr. Villon, we weren't expecting you."
"I donated enough money to fund a wing of this place for a year, and you didn't think I wouldn't stop in to make sure my investments were being put to good use?" Her tone was not quite caustic, but it was close.
"We're happy to have you, ma'am. The honor is all ours, but the patient you left in our care, he is still in dire condition. To put it plainly, it is a miracle he is alive at all. He should not have visitors right now. He needs rest."
"Has he woken up?"
"Once, briefly. But he's been sedated since then. We don't understand how he has survived this long."
"Then surely you won't deny an old friend what might be her last chance to say goodbye?" The dueling interests of his professional training and the hospital's benefactor's feelings flickered across the doctor's face. Eventually, like in so many other aspects of life, the financial concerns won out over the professional ones.
"I don't see why you can't see him for a few minutes, Dr. Villon. Be warned that he has suffered extensive burns to almost the entirety of his body. He is healing, but he is not a pretty sight."
"I'm confident knowing he is under your care will help assuage my personal misgivings at his appearance. Thank you, Doctor." Dr. Villon thought she did a pretty good job of working that last line on the doctor. Her eyes were still dry, of course, but the doctor looked like he was fighting back a tear or two.
Right this way.
He led her and her security detail to the room where she had already been headed. Then she saw him, her oldest friend, Samuel Goodwin, in the flesh. Or what was left of it, anyway. The doctor had repeatedly warned her it was a miracle he was alive. Still, seeing his burned and broken body came as a shock. Every inch of Goodwin was a mess of charred flesh and blisters. If not for his bulky frame and his tombstone teeth in his square jaw, there was no way she would have recognized him. A paper blanket lay over his legs, but his once muscular chest remained exposed. Villon could not help but compare his torso to the Nordic land of Muspelheim, except instead of rivers of lava between fields of ash, it was bloody cracks between charred pieces of skin. There was a time when she would have thought seeing such a tragedy might have inspired the imagination of an ancient Viking to create the terrifying land of fire and ash. But now she knew better. Muspelheim was real. As real as the magic that must have kept Goodwin alive for this long.
I know it doesn't look it, but he's doing surprisingly well, the doctor told her in an obviously well-rehearsed, gentle voice he must have perfected in medical school. Normally, people in his condition don't last a day. Yet he is still here a week later.
Sam always was a tenacious one. Villon gently laid a hand on the side of his bed. Is there hope for him, then?
Normally, I would say no. He has third-degree burns on nearly every inch of his body, plus broken ribs, bruises, contusions, and what we can only assume is a substantial amount of internal damage as well.
Can only assume? Villon asked pointedly. She would not delude herself into thinking Goodwin could recover from this, but it would not do for the doctor to think of her as anything but the overly concerned old friend.
We did not operate when he first came in, you understand. After a trauma like that, our first step is always to stabilize the patient. We suspected there was internal bleeding and organ damage, but we did not want to risk surgery until after we got him on an IV and made a full assessment.
And what did you find during this assessment? Villon let herself spit the word as if she was angry they were treating her dear Sam like just another patient.
He's responding well to our treatments, the doctor allowed himself to smile. Surprisingly well, I should say. I know he doesn't look it, but he's healing rapidly. Fresh skin is growing beneath the burned exterior, and his vitals are solid. X-rays show his ribs are somehow back in place, and any internal bleeding he had has stopped. If he continues as he has been, and that is a very big if, you understand, he could recover in as little as, let's say, a year?
A year. Villon felt the weight of the word in her mouth. My poor dear Sam might be himself again after a year of your care?
We believe so, ma'am. He is showing such an unusual recovery that we think it's possible. There will be longer-term rehabilitation, of course. One of his legs is shattered, and there's extensive nerve damage in his right hand going up his arm.
His right arm? Villon asked.
The doctor nodded. If I didn't know better, I'd say he grabbed a buried high-voltage electrical cable or something. Of course, there's nothing like that in the part of the park where he was recovered.
And that arm, it's not healing?
Not as well as the rest of him. But you must understand how unusual his rate of recovery is. We would expect the entire body to be in the same state as that arm. Instead, most of him is healing like, well, magic.
The doctor allowed himself a smile. He must not get to deliver good news often if this made him smirk. Villon wiped her eyes. It was easier than shedding a tear.
I know it's a lot, but he will get better as long as nothing changes. The road to recovery can be a long one, but for whatever reason, Mr. Goodwin is well on his way.
Could you give us a moment? Villon requested.
We're not supposed to.
One of Villon's security detail cracked their knuckles loud enough to quiet the doctor.
I have another patient to check on, but I'll be back in a few.
He left the room, but did not close the door behind him.
Watch the hall,
she told one of her men, while she gestured for the other to approach.
You sure about this, ma'am? I didn't think he'd be in this bad of shape.
I don't pay you to think, Griswold. I pay you to do as I order. Now will the injection do what you said it could, or not?
Griswold shrugged.
If he can be woken, this will do it. It's got adrenaline and multiple amphetamines, including...
Just dose him, Fillon snapped.
Griswold shrugged and blessedly stopped talking. He removed the cap from the syringe and stuck the needle into the IV tube so the mix of drugs could flow into the vein in Goodwin's hand. It took a moment for the drugs to reach his heart. When they did, his eyes popped open. Samuel sucked in a ragged breath of air past his still-perfect teeth, inflating his chest and forming new red cracks between the charred skin. He blinked, then turned his neck enough to face Villon. The whites of his eyes looked bizarre in his blackened face. Villon never thought Goodwin had particularly large eyes, but now the contrast made them seem to bug out.
Beatrice, he rasped.
His voice was as damaged as the rest of him.
Samuel.
She placed a hand on his forearm, and he winced.
Where am I?
That's not important right now. I need to know who did this to you. Was it the girl? The girl from the Vatna Yokel?
Samuel tried to nod, but it obviously pained him to do so.
Tara Olsen.
Very good. And how did she do this to you? Was it the Brunar Freyju?
Samuel tried to shake his head, but only gasped at the pain.
Was it the braces she stole from us? Fillon demanded.
No, not the bracers. The axe, it has power. Unimaginable power. I felt it, Beatrice. Do you understand? I felt it. We were right. The artifacts we discovered before were mere trinkets. So much more is possible. More than I believed.
Samuel smiled, and his cheeks cracked, making a twisted rictus of his memory of pleasure.
You had the axe, not her. We captured it along with her accomplice. Do you mean the Breeze Singerman did this to you? What power does it have?
Not accomplice. Grandson. He's her grandson,
he insisted, which didn't answer her question at all. Goodwin's eyes weren't focusing on her face anymore, but stared past her into some unseen memory. An unfortunate side effect of his condition and the cornucopia of drugs pumping through his system, no doubt.
Olsen is in her 20s. She doesn't have a child, let alone a grandson.
No. Her grandson. A sorcerer. He wishes he was a sorcerer. But he's a librarian of Asgard.
Goodwin was losing what modicum of coherence he had possessed.
Do you mean the man you captured? He's an archaeologist?
Fillon pressed.
Not an archaeologist. Not a man. Not completely. Weak like a man. Bleeds like a man. Fears like a man. Talks
like a man.
Talks like a librarian,
Samuel wheezed. Fillon sighed. Obviously, Goodwin had stewed in his nightmares for too long.
Tell me more about the fight. What is the axe capable of, exactly?
She threw fire at me. Fire from her hands. And the axe cut it. Absorbed it. I was so close. But they had help. Help from her. I saw her there on the edge of the battle. Watching. She did this to me.
The fingers on his right hand, the one the doctor said was not healing like the rest of him, twitched.
You said Tara threw fire at you. That was the work of the bracers?
Yes,
Goodwin grunted. The medical apparatus hooked to him beeped loudly. Either the conversation or the drugs were making his pulse jump all over the place. Fillon needed to wrap this up.
But you also said she was watching. Or did you mean the other one? The other man in the parachuting video?
Not him. Her!
Fillon sighed. It seemed she'd gotten all she could out of her old friend.
Well, almost all she could get.
From her pocket, Fillon withdrew a stone talisman covered in Norse runes. A
Until a moment ago, it had looked like any other stone artifact. Pretty, yes. Well worked, undoubtedly. Yet now the runes glowed with a faint light. Beatrice Villon looked past the magic in her hand and to the body of her old friend. The talisman made visible what normally stayed hidden from human eyes. She could see magic coursing through Goodwin everywhere but his right hand. It pumped through his heart and veins to his bruises and broken bones, healing them, providing what the doctors had witnessed but could not detect, let alone understand. Still, it was fading. Magic would not last forever in a human's body. This amount, while ample, could not possibly last the year it would take for him to recover. Leaving it here to drain away would be a waste. More than that, sacrilege. You fought bravely, Samuel Goodwin. A warrior turned scholar turned warrior once more. Odin would be proud, I think.
No, not him, Samuel countered.
Even on his deathbed, he had to debate her. It had kept her sharp over the years, but it could be tiring.
Can you see them, I wonder? The Valkyries?
Valkyries? Samuel asked.
Confusion filled his face underneath his charred skin.
Not Valhalla, no. The fields of Folkvanger.
It was an old debate between them, where a warrior would rather go when they died. Odin's Hall of Valhalla, or Freya's Fields of Battle, Folkvanger. The legends said half of those who died in battle went to each. Funny, Goodwin had always said Valhalla sounded better, while Villon had argued for Folkvanger. She supposed it made sense, though. He had been fighting over Freya's artifacts, not Odin's.
If these artifacts are real, I can't help but think the Valkyries must be as well. The whole lot of them, I suppose. I want you to know that even if you don't make it to Valhalla or Folkvanger, even if you fall into Hell's Domain, I will avenge you. You've helped me so much, Samuel. I never could have made it this far without you.
Samuel had stopped listening a moment ago. He formed a single word with his cracked lips.
Avenge?
Beatrice Villon inhaled, then recited the incantation etched into the talisman. When the final word left her lips, the magic left Samuel. It flowed out of his wounds, through his veins, to his heart, and into the talisman. Samuel gasped, then fell back on his pillow as his body went limp. The machine at his bedside loudly beeped as he began to flatline.
Doctor, I believe something is wrong,
Villon called into the hallway. She gestured to her men to follow as she left, slipping the talisman into her pocket. They left the hospital as the doctor and nurses rushed past them to Goodwin's room. Maybe the doctors could bring him back, but she doubted it. The only thing keeping him alive was the magic he had been hoarding. She felt it as she gripped the talisman in her pocket. Goodwin had been right. It was more than she had held before. This was more than she had realized, more than she had thought possible. It felt amazing. And it was only a taste. One of her security detail brought up the car, and another opened the door for her to get in the back seat.
What next, ma'am?
Griswold asked. A thought occurred to her. The observer Goodwin had been talking about. Could it have been... But no, that was a stretch too far. More likely, her old fling, Harris Barrow, had finally worked up enough steam to stop sitting on his hands. Even if the observer was someone more than Barrow, it would be far easier to start with his network, situated firmly in Midgard.
Contact my associates. It's time we went on the offensive against these crooks. They've stolen from three of our sites now. It seems the state of Norse archaeology won't be safe until we deal with Barrow's newest pet.
Chapter 2. Mads turned into the driveway of the private cabin and drove up the narrow dirt road. A quarter mile in, he couldn't see anything except pine trees. It was a good spot for a vacation, but an even better one to hide out. Mads had been telling himself he was here for the former, but it was really for the latter. When his employer, in all his infinite wisdom, said Mads could take a vacation if he'd liked,
He had known better than to charter a flight to a different part of the world than Tara Olsen and her companion, Leif Freyason. He'd tried to pick his own destination before. Bermuda, Bahamas, Fiji. The results were always the same. He'd start to settle in, maybe meet a girl who wanted to know more about the man behind the fake ID. Then his phone would ring. Baro would be on the other end of the line, wheedling him to cut his time off shorter than Mads would have liked. Well, most of the wheedling came when Mads convinced his benefactor to pay him a stipend for the hotel nights he wouldn't get to use, and the return flight that would take to the air with an empty seat. So much had happened with Tara and Leif. The girl had a trio of magical artifacts. Honest to God, magical artifacts that could do everything from throw fireballs to snatch Tara out of a tight situation and transport her to the other side of town. Mads figured he might as well stay close. This meant instead of enjoying the local tourist traps, old mill, tiny museum, fishing spots with no fish, he had loaded up a dozen donuts and headed to the cabin they had rented to train. He reached the high spot in the driveway, and the beauty of the rural north lay before him. The cabin itself was built on a lake cove and tucked in among the area's ubiquitous pine trees. Behind the place, the view across the lake revealed a few other isolated cabins, but in front of it, there was nothing but trees, which made it the perfect place for Tara and Leif to conduct their decidedly untraditional training regimen. Mads had hardly waved hello before the two of them got right back to it. The librarian was currently wearing the girl's bracers and using their power to hurl fireballs at her. Well, that was being generous. They were fireballs when Tara did it. Leif's efforts were closer to sparks.
"Absorb or destroy!"
Leif shouted on a loop like a broken record while he shot spark after spark at Tara. She swung the axe at each one. While she caught most of them, a few made it through. Her normally smooth hair, now singed in a few spots, made it clear these were not the first to make it past.
"I'm trying,"
Tara replied, spinning the axe as she reduced the spark to smoke. Mads got out of the car, went around for the donuts, then approached the pair of them. Even when dripping sweat and dressed in workout clothes, Tara was something to behold. He had thought of her as the girl earlier, but there was nothing girlish about her as she held that axe, her chest heaving from exertion. She had always been a looker. However, since they'd started working together, she must have been sneaking spa treatments and nights at the gym. She looked more and more like those old paintings Baro claimed depicted the idealized forms of women over the centuries, only with better biceps and thighs. Mads had learned not to tell her such things directly. She had a chip on her shoulder about her looks, or something. Whatever it was, Mads's normally more than capable charm always seemed to fizzle when applied to Tara. Still, he could play the long game.
"I thought your mates might be ready for a bit of a nosh."
Mads proffered the donuts like the gentleman he was.
"I was thinking it was time for a break,"
Leif agreed in his oddly accented English. Really, the bloke had gotten better at hiding it, but Mads could still hear it. That it was from Asgard was beyond belief, but then Mads had seen the man do amazing things. Compared to teleportation or an axe that could throw fireballs, being born in another realm shouldn't have been that strange.
"Mads, you look different," Tara noted, not unkindly.
"Ah, right you are, love, right you are. I'm partial to the red hair, and it matches some of the locals, but I thought the sides could use a bit of a trim-up. And, of course, that made me think of doing something with the sideburns."
"Don't call me..."
"Wouldn't dream of it, Miss Tara. Not while you're wielding that."
He pointed a donut at the axe. Compared to the other two artifacts, the axe looked positively pedestrian. The bracers around Leif's forearms were made of red gold and covered in some of the most delicate engraving Mads had ever seen. For a man who had made a career of pocketing things made of shiny metal, that was saying something. The circlet around Tara's neck could have been made from the same gold in the same shop, all delicate filigree and glowing with radiant beauty. The axe looked like something a woodsman would only resort to when their other equipment failed. It was fairly small, with a simple wooden handle and a metal blade that wrapped around the wooden shaft and flared out slightly. He had seen axes like it a dozen times before. In gift shops, hardware stores, and even outside sheds behind cabins like this one. Yet, there was something more to the axe as well. Like the other two artifacts, it seemed to radiate, if not light, then at least some sort of energy. Mads wouldn't have called it magic, but now that his boss was bandying the word about, he wouldn't correct him.
"These donuts are simply fantastic!"
Leaf crammed another one in his mouth. Mads had hardly given the skinny bloke the box, and already he'd inhaled two of them. Tara took one and grimaced. "Are these day old?"
"Made this morning, so the proprietress claimed. I wouldn't trust her word much more than I'd trust the sign on the front of the shop saying half of these were vegan. I did get you a coffee, though."
Mads couldn't help but wink as he reached back into the car and pulled out a fresh cup for Tara. "Thank you, Mads. It's still hot."
"I drive fast," he replied,
rather pleased with himself for how that little interaction had gone.
"Wait, are you telling me the do-nots could be better?"
Leaf asked, cramming a third one down his gullet.
"Mate, the real struggle would be to find one that tastes worse,"
Mads remarked. Despite having eaten one himself, he was more than willing to drive any wedge he could between Tara and the enigmatic Leaf. If it meant insulting the donuts he'd brought for them, so be it.
"Your world is blessed with flavor. Truly blessed." "And what world is that exactly? The 21st century? The North American continent?" "Midgard,"
Leaf mumbled around a bite of donut. Mads would have pushed it, but Tara's perfectly shaped eyebrows popped up, and he decided to leave it for now. Tara had gifts that did all sorts of things. It wasn't too much for Mads to believe Leaf was from the same place that had made the artifacts. If the two of them wanted to keep up their little ruse, that was fine with him. As long as it didn't get in the way of their job.
"How is the training going?"
Mads asked.
"Does Gandalf need to stop worrying, or not quite yet?" "Gandalf? Never met him,"
Leaf commented.
"Well, that's the first surprising thing I've heard from you in a while,"
Mads replied.
"You did say you were part elf."
Leaf shrugged and reached for yet another donut. He had to be telling the truth about being part elf. How else could someone keep his slim physique while eating the piles of garbage he ate? "The training's going great," Tara beamed. "The axe is taking some getting used to, but I found out how to use some of the power of the bracers, even when I'm not wearing them. Look!" She handed him her cup of coffee. Mads took it, only to discover it was ice cold.
"They can make cold coffee?"
"It was too hot, so I tried to cool it down."
"Stuck it a little too far back in the freezer, mate?"
Mads teased.
"Tara didn't create a block of ice. We should call that an accomplishment,"
Leaf announced. "Gee, thanks." Tara playfully punched Leaf in the arm. How Mads wished she'd touch him so casually. She still treated him like he was the thieving scum of the earth, which was technically correct, but it still stung from a woman like her.
"Control is everything with Seder. It's better and far more difficult to use less than more,"
Leaf explained, donning his spectacles. Despite his fingers being sticky with donut glaze, not a speck of it stuck to the sparkling glasses. Nothing ever did. Not mud, not blood, nothing. It was another of Leaf's odd quirks.
"Some would say the same about sugar,"
Mads retorted.
"No one where I'm from,"
Leaf countered. Tara grimaced, and Mads decided to save her.
"Is that why your hair looks like a palm tree, then, mate?"
Mads asked her. If she didn't like compliments, maybe she'd appreciate it the other way. Some women were like that.
"She has missed a few of my, sparks."
"Wait, is my hair bad? Like, how bad?" Tara asked, reaching for the top of her head, then running her hands down her black locks. Suddenly, it wasn't out of place anymore. In fact, it looked like she had spent an hour working on it. "What? Did I make it worse?" she asked, seeing Leaf and Mads's matching expressions.
"Not at all, mate,"
Mads mused.
though it might be best to put the spark dodging on pause for a bit. For once, I agree with this rapscallion. You've done quite well today, Terra.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?